to get intimate with Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, you are here with another episode of Checkpoint Intimates, where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one and get intimate on a particular gaming topic. My name is Elliot, joined in studio by... Oh, I thought you were going
to
say your own
name. I just wanted to like see how long you would do that for. It's Luke! It's me!
Awkward.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going for. I was like, yes!
It's the Luke and Elliot team back to talk about... We're doing, what,
Man of Medan.
Man of Medan.
Well, it's the Dark Pictures. I think this is... it's interesting because we... This is really self-masturbatory to want to talk about this game. Because it's one that we're both very excited for.
It is. Even though I forgot the name.
Even though you forgot what it is. But it is an interesting name. So literally the full name is The Dark Pictures Anthology, Man of Medan.
Yes.
And the idea of this, it's from the guys who made Until Dawn, which was a PlayStation 4 exclusive a few years ago, which you and I are very fond of.
Oh, we love these. Like, any game in that style, I'm always a fan of. But for some reason, that one game, Until Dawn, stood out to me so much.
It just had some fantastic jump scares, and it was all about that. Almost, it loved them, it relished in them. And, you know, you've got a bunch of teenagers going out to the woods to stay together in a cabin, and then people start dying and things start happening. And it was really clever because it did that whole horror trope of, like, you know, you know, someone's looking through a viewfinder to look over the cliffs, and then someone jumps up behind them and goes, rah, and the music goes, doo-doo, and you're like, oh, it's just Jimmy mucking around. Like, you know,
damn it, Jimmy.
Damn it. You know, and it had this really cool cast as well. You had, like, Hayden Panettiere, and you had the dude from iRobot.
Mr. Robot.
Rami Malek, who's an Oscar winner. I should know his name.
Yes.
anyway. But yeah, you know, it had some really great actors in there, and it was a really fun gaming experience, and it really tapped into that goofy, campy horror that I love and I know you love as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's that kind of slasher horror.
Where
it's like you look at it and you know it's ridiculous, but you're having such fun just kind of following the narrative.
Yeah. And it was choice-based, and it genuinely made me scared. And I had this idea of, like, you know, anyone could die any minute, and you had, like, different points in the game where characters could get killed off, or you could make decisions to save them. And I made some terrible choices in that game. There was one where there was, like, there was this rattling door, like an under, on the ground sort of thing.
Yes, and you went to
it. It was rattling. And we were trying to find a friend at the time who had gone missing. And everything in my horror instinct says, don't open that. It's rattling. Don't open that. And she's like, you know, Jimmy. So it's Jimmy again. Jimmy, is that you? And then no response. And the door's rattling. And I'm like, what do I do? Do I open it? Do I walk away? And I'm like, well, I'm going to open it in case it's Jimmy. So stupid. Like, fuck, have you not watched this before? Anyway, next minute, she gets her fucking face ripped off. And I'm like, well, okay, I deserve that. I deserve that completely.
And there's a certain amount of, like, if you pay enough attention and read all about, like, every note you find or whatever, or look through the viewfinder of the tiki idols that you find along the way, you know not to have done that. You learn that the Wendigos can project their voice and mimic voices and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which means that you could put two and two together and go, oh no, this is an obvious trap.
So dumb. But look, either way, fun game. Loved it. Gave it a great review here on Checkpoint
years
ago.
But we're not talking about it.
We're not talking about it. No, that just sets us up for this Dark Pictures to help you understand why we're so hyped about Dark Pictures. So this is the same development team who are making the same style of game. So
Supermassive.
Supermassive games are campy, horror, fun times. I had the chance to play the first part of this anthology, Man of Medan.
You did.
Last year in Paris.
Very jealous.
I was excited and surprised to see it there, but I went straight to it. Like, there was always great games surrounding it, like, you know, Days Gone was right next to it. You had, like, other big releases, like Metro before that came out. Yep. Some huge games, Resident Evil, and I was like, no, straight Dark Pictures. And I was, like, one of the first ones there. They were like, oh, you're really keen on this. Like, yeah, I'm so keen. And it lives up to expectations. It is the same walking around, chatting, talking to people, making decisions.
This is a set of teenagers who found their way onto a submarine, an abandoned submarine.
They get, like, kidnapped, basically, by this other group, and they get put in this submarine. And, of course, it's a haunted submarine.
Submerged or not?
Submerged.
How do they get down?
It's a long story.
Okay.
They're on a boating trip. I don't know. I'm sure it'll be explained. teenagers on a submarine, all right? That's what matters here. And, yeah, you know, in the demo I played, they get separated. There's two people, this girl and her friend. And then there's like this scene where these hands kind of come out of the water and start dragging the friend down. And there's this moment of like, do I help him or not sort of thing. And I chose, I'm going to try and help him. And of course I tried and it was too late. So the response was he popped up and was a ghost all of a sudden and then got me. And it ended the demo. And I was like, whoa, it jumped out, you know. And I was like, oh shit, that was the wrong decision.
I'm going to assume the demo differs from the game only in that it's a pretty big spoiler, I guess. Or if different decisions lead you to different areas, maybe it doesn't matter that much.
Quite possibly. Yeah. But yeah, made a bad choice. That's okay. But you know, it looks like a really fun game. Tapping into that. The news is, though, why I want to talk about this today specifically is because they've announced they're doing 8 games.
Yeah, crazy.
8.
So they're actually living up to the name of Anthology, which I guess up until this point, or maybe I just didn't think about it enough, I just assumed it was just like a franchise header and they'll do whatever they want with that.
Or they'll do 3.
Yeah.
You know, like, they might do a couple if it does well.
But apparently they're doing 8. So this almost feels like... Is this the first time we've seen an actual anthology gaming series? Being that it's this recurring kind of series under this one name, but it's different every time. It's a different story every time, different characters.
I think so. I'm trying to think back to previous games. I know that... Horror is, it seems to be the franchise they dabble in this with the most in terms of pop culture and history. Mm. And the reason for that is because I think in horror, a trope of horror is characters getting killed off. Yes. And you just literally can't go forever because eventually they're all going to die, right?
Yeah.
And so,
that's,
you know.
That's very true. If you just had sequel after sequel, eventually it'd be like, well, hang on. If they're planning more sequels, this last character obviously doesn't die.
That's right. And you know, even like right now with the Halloween remakes, you've got Jamie Lee Curtis still running around. You're like, mate, come on. You know, eventually you hit that point where you can't survive this many times, you idiot. And so I think that horror is a great way to do anthology series. And in history, we've seen some fantastic ones in TV, like Twilight Zone. There's a new one that's been a monthly TV show, but they're like hour and a half episodes called Into the Dark.
Ooh.
Another horror anthology series, which you should definitely check out. It's still running month to month at the moment. And
does it count if they're like the one season is the same story, but then the next season is different? I'm thinking like American Horror Story kind of thing.
Yeah, I'd say that's an anthology series as well, American Horror Story. Except when they do kind of cross over a bit, it's a bit sort of...
That's true. Like, there's some blurs there, now, but that's okay.
Now it's a clusterfuck, but that's a Ryan Murphy for you in all he does. But you know, I guess you could even say like with Resident Evil... In some ways, that series often had different main protagonists. You know what I mean? And they were in different scenarios, but it was all zombie apocalypse stuff, right? But I mean, if you look at like Resident Evil 1, and then you look at like 2, which had different characters, 3 had Jill Valentine in the lead for the first time, I think. Or was she in the first one?
I don't know. You'd know more about the series than me.
Well, yeah. Well, it was Claire and Leon the second one.
I'm scared to say anything because you'll be like, wrong.
No, I'm not that. No, the early ones, I'm a bit blurry. I think Jill might have been the first one. But anyway, yeah, because Jill Sandwich.
Yes.
Yeah. But then you had the fourth one. You know, you've got Leon again, but like a totally different setting. Like totally different types of zombies even. Totally different type of virus, basically. It was like a mutation. And then 5 was like different characters.
They followed a lot of the same themes, though.
Same themes, but it was kind of different. And I think Silent Hill is a perfect example, actually, now I think about it. It has a different protagonist every single time.
Mm.
It's always linked to...
Is that
to
enough to make it an anthology?
Well, it's always linked to the same...
I guess it's each to their
town,
own, right?
Same idea. But no, I guess it probably doesn't count as an anthology. And I think the difference with Dark Pictures is they want it to be shocking. Like every episode, so to speak, or every game, there's going to be a different setting with entirely different characters and different actors.
And they've already said they want to play on kind of their own predictability in that they'll mix it up at some point because you are used to this as an anthology. And maybe they'll use that kind of comfort that players are feeling in that, oh, I know this already. I'm already a bit of a seasoned kind of anthology player. And they'll use that to... kind of change things up and scare people, essentially, which sounds really interesting. I mean, it definitely my kind of thing. I know it's your kind of thing, Luke. But it does bring up a lot of kind of questions, right? I mean, my immediate one is 8 games? They're going to commit to 8 games? And how much further could it possibly go after that?
Yeah. And to me, it depends how long these experiences are, too, and how much they sell them for. I mean, we've seen, you know, Telltale's Walking Dead do 3 seasons or 4 seasons or whatever. Each season has 5 episodes and stuff. And, you know, that essentially works in that way because they're short, sharp, bang, here you go.
But you usually hate episodic games. Yet I do. You're really hyped for Dark Pictures.
Well, it's not episodic, though. They're separate games.
There's almost a similarity, though, you don't reckon? I mean, some episodic games, something like The Wolf Among Us, probably took about 6 months between episodes, and if this series of games is taking 6 months between kind of releases, it almost feels similar.
But if they're full-blown different stories and different games, and they're like 5 to 6 hour experiences each at least, I think that justifies it as being a different experience from being episodic.
I mean, I'm definitely waiting to get it in my hands. I'm just worried that I'm going to have that same feeling of, oh, I want the next one now. Maybe I'll wait kind of thing, or maybe I'll just get tired of the same kind of similar concept over and over. I don't know I actually play them.
It depends if the concepts are always going to be the same styles of scares as well. And that's kind of a thing with horror, is you do get burnt out on certain types of jump scares.
Sure.
I mean, Until Dawn was fun, but I wouldn't want to play that exact same DNA of a game every single time, you know?
No.
Over and over and over again, twice a year.
Yeah.
It was special because it was different at the time. I'm hyped for Man and Medan because Until Dawn came out 5 years ago. I'm ready for a
new
one.
Well overdue.
Yeah, I'm ready for this new one to come out. I'm excited about it. Do I want to play that game again in 6 months' time after I finish Man and Medan? I don't know. It needs to be different enough, you know? Are the enemies going to be really different? Are the types of scares different? Are we going to see some of these games not just do that conventional jump scare stuff? Are we going to see more Twilight Zone-esque style of horror where it's more of a slow burn and a story that kind of grows and evolves, and by the end of the game there's like a twist and you're like, oh shit, that was weird.
I got a feeling that's what they're aiming for, because they've got different kind of writers and producers on every single one of these games, apparently. Or they're working on at least a few already with different teams, like working on these development projects. So,
yeah.
You know, potentially we are seeing something completely different, assuming the teams aren't working too closely together and they're telling their own kind of stories.
Yeah, and I think ultimately what this is going to be interesting is how they're going to sell when they come out. I mean, Until Dawn was a good game. It wasn't a high-selling game.
Brilliantly, no.
No, but it was a cool game.
I think it had enough appeal to the kind of niche audience that loved it, that they're using that kind of love to push themselves further.
Well, Until Dawn also went through a lot of development struggles in the back end as well before it came out. It was a different game that came out from what it was originally planned to be, which is interesting as well. They found a good sort of niche to be in now, though. But yeah, I'm surprised they've committed to 8 publicly before Man and Medan has come out. But I guess if they've got these 8, you know, different teams all working, and they've got different screenwriters, different director, and different actors for every single one, they're going to start that motion capture process pretty early, I suppose, so they can get working on it. I mean, I wonder why they've decided 8 as well. They're so specific.
Mm.
8 is such a clear number to have.
Even just to say they'll be 6 months apart, like, that's very specific.
Yeah,
what
why don't
happens
you just,
if one game gets delayed by 4 months?
Is it throw off the whole schedule?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, why don't you just go, there's more coming, at least 5? Like, I don't know. Why do you commit to so many?
Maybe they just anticipated this as like, oh, well, people are going to question what anthology means. We have to be real and define this to make sure people understand what we're making here. And maybe that's why they gave it such strict release schedules, and I don't know.
In a way, it's good. I mean, I'm all about them being transparent with what they're working on.
Sure.
It helps me understand where the franchise is going.
But nobody's delayed 7 games at the one time.
Delay. So,
you know what I mean? Like, if this game, Man of Medan, let's assume that releases on schedule, and then after that, they're like, oh no, we have to, like, there's no way the next game in the series is going to be ready on time. We're going to have to delay 7 games at once because we still want the gap between releases.
Yeah. But again, if they're all different games and different developers and they can get them out there earlier, do they have to have big gaps?
No.
You know, the game purchase cycle for consumers right now is it comes out, everyone goes and buys it, and then within a month, it's like on sale, and then like within 2 months after that, it's on Game Pass or in a bargain bin somewhere. Like, games don't have a long shelf life. Occasionally they do, like the top tier ones might, but generally speaking, these third party releases, they're in the bargain bin before you know it. I've already seen games that came out like a month and a half ago already on sale half price as part of different sales and stuff.
Here's a crazy thing I just realized. If they're actually doing 8 games every 6 months, then they're developing a game right now for 4 years in the future, right? Theoretically. 6 months, 8 games.
Theoretically.
Are they developing for next-gen consoles? Are they thinking about that? Are we going to, like, eventually get a game that feels like it's dated by 4 years? Like, where is technology heading, and how is this as a series keeping up?
But you know what? The style of this particular game franchise, the way it looks and plays and acts, I don't think it's going to be impacted too heavily by the next generation. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like they're going to be like, ooh, we have this ray tracing technology in these monsters. It's going to help with loading times and stuff, sure. I'm fully aware they probably have those dev kits already that can work on the PS5
hopefully,
and
yeah.
Xbox Scarlet. You know,
are they actually going multi-platform? Because Until Dawn was just
PlayStation.
Yeah. Oh, they
Dark Pictures both.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good. Partly why it's interesting they're not doing the Sony exclusive thing with this one.
Yeah.
They're doing multiple platforms. Not Switch, though, but that's fine.
That's okay.
that's fine. I guess the bottom line is, will you buy one? Or will you just, as an audience, will they then look at it like they do with horror movies? And they go, oh, this one has a story that seems cool. Oh, this one doesn't. I'm not going to buy that one. Oh, I might look at the next one. You know what I mean? Are they trying to create this whole thing where even their own fan base is kind of choosing which titles they want to purchase? Because eventually in 4 years' time, we're going to have 8 Dark Pictures games on the store,
yeah.
Each with their own story and their own actors and cast and stuff. I mean, as a consumer, if you just saw all 8 there, you'd pick the ones that you like to look of the most, right?
Or they'd sell it as a bundle eventually, right?
A box set sort of thing. It's full season. Yeah, exactly. A full bundle. Dark Pictures Anthology, 8 for the price of 4 or something. You know, they could do that as well. I think they're giving themselves a lot of different options in terms of their marketing, in terms of their sales. They're certainly leaving it very open to decide later what they do with that side of it. So, yeah, I mean, it's curious, that's for sure. I'm curious to see how audiences will take this.
Yeah, well, that's a real question, right? Because they're taking a risk. If they are legitimately doing this anthology in a way nobody's done before in gaming, then that's a risk. The first time is always a risk. And we've seen episodic gaming kind of not do brilliantly, despite initially doing quite well. So, I mean, that's just bringing us right back to the conversation of why commit to 8 already. But, you know, it's going to be super interesting because this is a development company that can clearly do something well, despite any flaws that Until Dawn might have had. It's still one of those games that makes you go, I had a really good time playing that. Like, I didn't expect to, but I had a really good time. So this is a studio that clearly there's something there. There's something really working to their favor, and I hope this continues to work for them.
Well, I think the bottom line is as well is, like, you know, you have a different way of putting games out there, and this is the same thing that's happened with anthology series, with TV and movies as well. And what that is there's going to be people who buy this first one, Man and Medan, love it, and will then likely buy every single one that comes out. You've got that person. That's your unicorn consumer, right?
Sure.
That's like your golden. That's me and you, Elliot.
The rainbow pooping unicorn.
Yeah, that's me and you.
Yes.
Pooping rainbows, horns on our heads, all
happening. Absolutely.
Because we're going to buy all these probably, because we love it. So that's the goal, right? To get someone that buys the first one, loves it, and invests in the entire franchise moving forward, they're committed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to have people who maybe they don't want to buy that many horror games, you know? And maybe they won't buy Man of Medan. But then if you just do Man of Medan 2, Man of Medan 3, and it's the ongoing characters,
the
ongoing story, the most Man of Medan. The man of the Medan with the most
the
Man of Medan.
The manliest Man of Medan.
The woman of Medan.
Ooh, there's so many options.
Yeah, exactly. The non-binary of Medan. It's a whole thing. So you're going to eventually hit a point where someone, like we talked about on the show last week about Yakuza, right? Where I'm like, Yakuza 6, I don't want to play 5 Yakuzas. I can't be bothered. So if you do that route of like the standard sequels of a horror game, people are going to get to the third and fourth one and go, well, I can't play that now. I don't want to play that because I'm not invested in the franchise.
Mm.
However, with an anthology series being different characters, different story every time, I could theoretically see the third one and go, I'm going to try that
one.
You
can do it in any order.
And not feel like I'm missing out.
Yep.
Not feel like I've missed key plot elements or key points that I'm going to be like, oh, I'm behind on this.
I think that's fair.
I can just jump in. And that's kind of clever too.
It is, because you can look at one and say, oh, I might give that a skip. It doesn't seem to quite be right for me. And then you look at another and it's like, no, that's the kind of game I want to play.
Correct.
Despite the fact that they're linked together and probably very similar.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's consumer options, right? Which is always a good thing. So, what do you reckon? Like, we know what Man of Medan is and there's 7 question marks out there.
Yeah.
Do you have any guesses or what would you like to see? What kind of themes, what kind of areas would you want to explore in a game like this?
I think the key thing for me is every game needs to have a different threat. You know, I think that, you know, Until Dawn had the Wendigos, right?
Yep.
Man and Medan, Not sure exactly, but it seems haunted. It seems ghostly.
Yeah.
We're talking about multiple hands coming out of the water at once and stuff like that. It's like ghosty zombie, that whole thing. And ghosts freak me the F out, so I'm keen for that. I really am. So then I think, you know, the third one needs to be a different threat. Well, and I think a different time period as well. I don't want to see just teenagers every single time in the modern day.
See, I'm sure it's just me, but I much prefer modern day teenagers because it's like a relatability thing. Like,
yeah, sure.
I'm like, oh, I can imagine that, but as soon as they go back to the 80s or a period like that, I'm like, ugh, I've seen this before. And I know it's a stupid thing to say because I've seen so many modern day ones.
I understand.
But they don't get old for me.
But I want different threats, so I think is the main thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, we've had the kids in the woods. We have the kids in the submarine. I don't know. Put them in a plane.
In the pyramids of Egypt.
Yeah. Well, yeah, traveling. Europe. Yeah. I want to see them in different scenarios where there's different threats that happen and like ancient evils too.
What about non-supernatural threats? Or do you reckon it's so iconic to the series that it has to be supernatural?
I feel like non-supernatural threats would be a letdown.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it because it's less scary for you?
Yeah. I think honestly, as a video game that's a longer experience, I think that a non-supernatural threat leaves them quite restricted in terms of the kinds of scares they can do.
Well, I mean, it's really interesting because of In Until Dawn, it felt like it started with a non-supernatural threat and then they turned the tables and it was supernatural. Maybe they can do the opposite where it starts like they hear voices, they hear noises. It's all assumed a supernatural threat until that halfway point where things get explained and it becomes this real physical threat.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, for me, supernatural is always a bit freakier than real stuff.
It does feel like you can do more.
Yeah.
When the impossible can be possible, you can do more.
Especially, you know, when there's lore involved. I think that, you know, movies and TV, it's easy to be like, oh, let's have a flashback, and it's like backstory, and it's like, oh, you know, my mother was killed by a killer, and oh, okay, right. Now it's hunting the daughter, great. But in games and stuff, because you're playing them, you know, it's hard to inject that backstory naturally and make it feel right without just bombarding you in cutscenes and stupid stuff. I think that if you're just a teenager or a young person or whatever and something random starts happening that starts killing off people and you don't know what it is and you don't have some dark past that connects you to the killer because, I don't know, you found an amethyst in the bottom of your basement and did a chant from your mum's Bible one time.
Yeah,
I think that there's more relatability to not knowing what the fuck is going on as opposed to like, oh, this person clearly has a connection to the killer and that's why he's hunting her.
You know what? I agree. But do you know what I would also really like to see? So, it wasn't just a supernatural threat in Until Dawn. It's kind of like folklore, history. There was things attached, different cultures and how they perceived kind of reality. Let's follow that trend. There's probably so many different kinds of demons or creatures or stuff that come out of folklore and mythology and different cultures that we've never heard of before, unless you've done a lot of research. But there's probably so many out there. Let's continue to explore those because there's always really fascinating things to find out.
I think ultimately the unknown about what they could do and the potential and possibility of what they can do is really exciting. And I think that, you know, different teams, different actors, different writers.
Yeah,
I mean,
one of them will be good.
Different writers. That's exciting because you really don't know what you're going to get. And it could be anything. Who knows what someone's going to do who hasn't been attached to the project before. They're going to have all kinds of wild ideas.
Exactly.
And I think that means hopefully each game, whilst being part of the same Dark Pictures anthology and having the similar look and similar style and genre, hopefully they all have a unique twist that does separate them all from each other and makes them stand out from the pack as well.
Yeah, and you kind of assume that, right? It's not going to get so stale when there's literally completely different teams working on the project. Anyway, that probably is about all the time we've got for Man of Medan.
Yeah.
I hope you guys are excited about this game as we are.
Hopefully we helped get you hyped. But we
or
are going to...
question things, I don't know.
Don't worry, we're going to talk about it more in the coming weeks, I'm sure, with a full review when it comes out. So, I'm definitely keen to see what they do with this one.
Absolutely. Luke, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
We've been Checkpoint Intimates. Make sure you tune in next week when we get down and dirty on some more intimate goodness. Yeah. Bye, guys.
You've been listening to Checkpoint Intimates. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher.